the Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Hi, this is Charlie Suter, and you are listening to the Sports Coaching Podcast of Sam Holmshaw.
Okay, welcome to the latest episode of the Sports Coaching Podcast with me, Sam Holmshaw. As always, we hope everyone's well in these strange and difficult times at the minute, but absolutely delighted to welcome all the way over in Switzerland today, Charlie Suter onto the podcast. Charlie, how are you? How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for asking. How are you?
Yeah, really good. It's great to have you on. Visiting all the way from Switzerland. How's it over in Switzerland at the minute in the strange situation we're in?
Well, in fact, as you mentioned, it's difficult. It's always up and down. We had a lockdown earlier this year in fall as Europe in general. And now currently it's not a lockdown. It's much softer than France or Germany. But still we have some region where the restaurants are closed and things are shut down. And you know what many people don't understand, Switzerland, it's a tiny country, of course. But we make it even tinier because of each region or canton has his own rules. And some cantons are open, some are closed, and yeah, that doesn't make
does it make life
we easy? Don't talk about making sense, or do we?
brilliant. Well, I'm glad to hear you're doing okay anyway, Charlie. So as we always do on the podcast, if you wouldn't mind just giving a bit of a brief introduction to yourself. But I guess both your coaching journey and, you know, just your journey in life. What was your start in coaching? I guess what's led you to where you are today, and what sport as well? That'd be great if you wouldn't mind sharing.
Yeah, lovely. Earlier on in my younger age, I was playing football, as most of the kids did, because we only had a football club in the neighborhood, and then you play football. And I had then to stop it after an injury with the knees after 15 years. I did some coaching or training, but not that very successful. And so it was obvious that I definitely can't live from it. So I had to find a way to get to make some money to feed the family. And so I started a career in a bank, and 3 years ago I decided to start my own company, where I do some digitalization project. And it was also very clear for me that I need something else beside the sport. So I started together with my two younger kids playing curling. You know, the sport with the cool sport on ice with the rocks. As it often comes, you know, if you have some experience in coaching and some addictness to sport, you don't stop with playing. You get into the coaching, and since 2 years, 3 years now, coaching also the Cherry Rockers. Great name, isn't it? Cherry Rockers are the youngest players from 0 to 11. In fact, there are my youngest are six-year-old boys and girls together in one team. And If you have somebody who is 6 year old and some players which are 11 or 10 and a half, you have a huge gap from age, from personality, from development, from power, from everything. And it's pretty challenging or pretty fun on the other side to align those, to bring it together to a team.
Yeah, I can certainly imagine such a wide age, like you say, of physical development, but also psychological, social development, as well as obviously your technical and tactical. So if I believe, am I right in saying it's a curling club? I don't know how you pronounce it. Is it curling club Arau? Is that right?
Curling club. Fine.
As we said before, not too great on pronunciation. But tell us a bit more about the curling club. I'd be interested to hear about that, and I guess a bit more of an insight, if you don't mind.
Yeah, the curling club was founded 61 years ago. Obviously, we had the celebration this spring, which then didn't happen due to Corona, but. We give another try next year to celebrate it. Some people are pretty happy that they get an extra year to preparation. it's 60 years old. The club is a private club. The club is not supported by local community or government or so it lives from it has two income streams: the members, and the other one are events where people come and pay to play an hour curling with the company or friends or whatever. And currently, it's also quite struggling. Events, this is completely broken away. Not many events, or also from the restaurant or tournament. There is no income currently. We're quite suffering, but that's part of the game.
Yeah.
We decided to keep the curling hall open to play. It has different backgrounds. One, of course, is also that the current world champion women team is from Arau, from my club, and they also need the facilities to train to play for what may come. There's a new world championship in spring planned, next year the Olympic Games. So it's for them it's much much worse than for us, to be honest. With the young players I can play, we don't have tournaments, but we can train them and prepare them for the Swiss Championship, which will take in February, hopefully.
Fantastic. Great insight into the club. And I suppose a last question. I know we're going to talk a bit more about the sport and the rules later on in this podcast episode, but I guess is curling it a big sport in Switzerland? I think we're aware that obviously, in England or in the UK, should I say, it's probably one of those sports that you don't hear too much about. You certainly watch it on the TV, you watch it when the Olympics are on, but I would say it's not a dominant sport of England, should I say. So what's the sport like in Switzerland? Is it a big traditional Swiss sport, or is it more of the same?
Yeah, it's more of the same. It's funny. You hear it very often that people say, "Oh, curling! Yeah, I love to watch it on TV. Yeah. On the Olympics, I always watch the curling." And I never thought that I could play it. And it was for, oh, and also people don't play that often. Oh, it's, oh, you know, you mentioned it in England, maybe it's not, it's pretty similar. The Scottish, they are doing pretty well in curling. And a big curling nation is Canada, of course. But how we are, from our perspective, Switzerland is maybe number two behind Canada.
Yeah.
Maybe the Scottish listener would say three is fine enough, but yeah, but it's definitely football, ice hockey, there are floorball are more common, or but it's getting away from the touch of that is for rich and old people only,
which would have traditionally been the sport.
Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting.
We always have in the association, we have discussion about, yeah, how do other countries do with the young players, with how do they develop, how what's the program they have, and so, and then we say, they're all only Canadian which have young player in this age, in the, for example, the Jerry Rockers category doesn't exist in other countries.
Yeah.
They're juniors and...
Yeah, interesting.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Interesting. Well, I think that brings us on very nicely to then give an introduction about the topic today. So obviously, Charlie, with your background in curling, we decided that we were going to base today's episode as an introduction to coaching curling discussing similarities and differences to team sports, which I think is probably, you know, dominated on this podcast, talking about team sports, preferably football or soccer normally. So, you know, I suppose if we jump straight into the question, Charlie, I think a great way to start would be for a lot of listeners that probably aren't as familiar with the sport or maybe haven't, you know, seen the sport before. I guess, could you give us a brief description of the game and the rules, you know, just for the layperson listener, really? Mm-hmm.
Sure, yeah, and now the next Olympic Games are next year, so everybody has to wait to watch it on TV. but I'm pretty sure you will, if you hang out for the Olympic Games, you will wait for the curling games after our talk. No, it's we play on a ice rink, it's called. And the field, the pitch in soccer, it's a rink, and you have two houses on on each side, and the aim is to be as close to the pin as possible with your stone, and as many stones which are better than the competitors, you write as many stones as you can make it, and we play four players. In the junior age, they start with gender-specific criteria. So in the lowest junior level, you can mix them. 3-2, 2-2, whatever. Later on, then it's 3-1. So you play in the boys category or in the girls. And the next even higher level, it's limited to gender specific. You play in the boys category or in the girls, and then it goes up to the elites where it's also fixed. As I understand football quite well, there are some big differences, and there are also things you mentioned in your earlier podcasts, that you have to give the player the capacity to develop their own innovation, their own fantasy. How can you teach players a knowledge of the game itself. This is very crucial in curling, because we don't have teachers or no we have only the players are on the rink. They play for themselves, and there is no referee around. There is they are on their own, those four players, and also the coaches are not allowed to do an active coaching. So believe it or not, it's damn hard to sit behind the window.
Imagine, yeah.
To be quiet.
Yeah.
Just sit there and watch what they do. And also from the rules, if they... There are rules, of course, but if those skip, which is the name of the person who is standing in the house and telling the direction and give the, he decides about the strategy. When those two skips discuss and say, well, we played with the rule like this, or we use this rule, and for both of them is fine, then it's fine. Then they handle it out, and then it's okay.
Interesting. And so the players are very much left then to almost figure it out themselves, aren't they? Is that what you're saying in terms of when they're learning the sport, and it's
a
case of developing and learning through practice, learning through experience, which I think is fascinating, actually. So.
Yeah, you have to stop telling it's wrong.
Yeah.
You have to stop or you have to say them, why did you like this, and are there also other ways? Why did you choose this way? Did you see the other way or not?
Mm. So, is it more? So I think about football, for example. So people often say football is, very technical and tactical. That's often associated. But for me, as a football coach of 7 years and a football player, I think that sometimes you can get away with the technique if you have the tactic, I would argue. Some would argue differently. Some would say, what must be tactically possible needs to be able to do the technique, if that makes sense. So is curling more of a tactical sport then, and then it's kind of come up with the technique, or is it more very technical as well? And if it is, I guess, how do you go about teaching those techniques if, you're not actively allowed on the side? I think that's fascinating.
Probably it's 25% tactic, 25% technique. And then the other 50% are split into mental things and also physics. The games are 1 hour for the Cherry Rockers. When we come back to them, it's 1 hour where you play the game. And as I mentioned, there are between 6 and 11. And they play 1 hour of curling, which are four ends. Then you need some physics. You also need to be able to concentrate, which is very often pretty funny to watch from the side, because girls are more steady when boys are... They never have problems to concentrate in the very first two ends, but in the fourth end, you are happy that you have some girls in your team, because they are not able to concentrate 1 hour. And technique as well, and tactic, of course. Technique, I mean, you can use a brilliant tactic if the stone doesn't come there where it should be, and this is 80% the case in younger age, and they come less at the exact point than they come in to another way, and then you have on one side the tactics, on the other side the technical limitation, or that the stones don't come there where they should be. So you have to manage this with creativity to do something with the stone when it's on the way. And even of course in professional, you say, yeah, you can brush them and to keep them going straighter or let them curl more. But if you are 8 years old, you can brush as much as you want. It doesn't have the same effect.
Yeah.
In football, you can do more, even if the tactic maybe is not that brilliant. When you run more, when you are faster, when you can run 90 minutes, you can compensate.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. 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 And it is so interesting because, you know, it very much sounds like to me that, you know, because of the constraints of the sport, if you like, so, you know, you can't, you know, as we say in football, coach on the sidelines, like you said, they very much are left to develop themselves. I find that fascinating because, you know, in this country, predominantly in the team sports, which is what I've witnessed and seen. I don't know about individual sports, but everything is technique is often taught and it is sometimes prescribed. So it must be, you must perform the technique like this. And if you don't perform it like this, we're going to correct you and make it look like this, which is something I've always disagreed with from a personal perspective, but it happens. It happens all the time. Others believe that's really important. So it fascinates me how that kind of has to happen in curling, and from the other side, sorry, that they have to just figure out a technique. So because of that, then the techniques that eventually when you think about the children you work with at the minute, when they get to adult age, should we say, and hopefully go on to be in the professional or semi-professional sport of curling, or even if they play amateur, are the techniques looking the same, or is it very unique? Our technique, when you watch one player, will you see a similar technique, or is it just completely different with it being self-taught? That's what I'd be interested to ask.
Well, I mean, we are not that far away from in curling from football. Yeah. There are those two groups of people. There is one group saying you have to play exactly like this. Here is the manual. It's the technique is exactly like this. You have to, your feet must be like this, and so. And there's the other group of people saying, you have to be comfortable. If you are precise, if your stones come exactly there where they are, or where they should be, I don't care how you do it. And what we try to do, or what I try to do with my kids, is to find a way in between, because you cannot teach the youngest and tell them you have all the freedom, do it however you like it. And we try to teach them the techniques, the elements, to give them the chance to deliver. But on the other side, for some players, you have to accept if they have some attitude which they are not able to bring away. Because also the very best curling player of the world, Eldin from Sweden, he's fantastic. He's Cristiano Ronaldo in curling. every stone has a precision which is unbelievable on ice, on this distance, and from year to year. I have to say, it's not one game or one end, it's from year to year, the same level. He has a position in sliding which is maybe not the best one for your knees. And you cannot teach every kid to have this position. It will not work. Mm. And is for some of the kids, are it's not healthy. And you see it also very often if the kids grow, if they come into the junior age, they make a jump. Somewhere in 12, 13 years old, they make a jump in body development. And the whole positioning of the hand and doesn't work anymore, because they are from 1 year to the other 10 centimeters, 20 centimeters taller. So they have to find a new way. And it's not like in soccer, you get more physic, you get more power and so. But if you grow 10 centimeters, it makes a difference in positioning on yourself on the ice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, again, you know, fascinating. And I think that's something that, you know, I don't know if football does as much as that now in this country. I think it is more age stage, what technique should look like at different stages of development. But I know in some sports, such as equestrian horse riding, for example, they do teach the kids how to ride the horse like an elite rider. But the goal of an elite rider is to win, whereas the goal of a beginner is just to stay on the horse. And, you know, this is what I find so strange, really, when these frameworks, and they're based on the elite Cristiano Ronaldo, but you're trying to teach that to a five-year-old, and then, you know, coaches don't understand why it doesn't work. But like you say there, you know,
have you seen the show on Netflix with I don't know the name, five coaches, they ask them some questions and talk about their philosophy and so on. And Jose Mourinho said there, what shall I teach Cristiano Ronaldo how to shoot a free kick? Come on. And I mean, of course, we have in the younger age, we have to give them the techniques, the physics, the mental.
Yeah.
But in the tournament, or especially in when you then play for the Swiss Championship, you don't talk about the techniques, because it's done. It's what you have missed to tell them 2 months or 3 months, or to teach them 2 months, 3 months ago. You can't teach them during the game or the tournament.
Yeah.
And there is also another, you know, it's a difference between being on the rink with them in the training, in the practice, to train them, and on the other side, during the game, to coach. You can't coach them in the game. You only can coach them from game to the next game. And you are a little bit by side. And for the kids, I guess it's a very lovely thing. You have no coaches, no parents, no visitors shooting in and disturbing you or whatever. You're on your own. Mm-hmm. And you do something you like, hopefully.
Yeah.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, I guess this brings us on very nicely to our second segment, when we are talking about those differences between I guess the constraints or the restrictions of curling from a coach's perspective towards you know, team sports, for example. And And again, I find that fascinating because, you know what, a couple of years back in football, the Football Association in England, they introduced, I think it was a silent coach or something like that. And it was when I first started. So I was only 17, I was a young coach. And it was no coaches could talk for the game. And I thought it was absolutely fantastic because you could hear these, I mean, we were doing an under-10s team at the time. They were talking to each other. You didn't get any of the, my you know, other coaches going, no, you can't do this, you do this, you do this, you do this, you do this. And I thought it was brilliant. And I've always felt, you know, when you think about like the adult sport, so I'm in the adult sport of football now, players need that. But in youth development, they don't need that. They need to learn and figure it out. So, you know, in terms of, for you as a curling coach, do you actually think that is beneficial or is it too restricting? Because sometimes you might need to say something that will really benefit that player in the game. I find that fascinating.
Well, no, if you teach them right during the season, then they are able to find their own solution, and they need to find their own solution. You know, if they hand off the stone from the delivery, and then even if you have an idea where it comes and how it happens, you are always late when you say it. And you're always behind the time. That's the same in football. If you say something from the side, play to the other one on the left side, or hey, everybody knows the ball comes to the left side, we stay a little bit back, we got it. You're always late, so you can't give those advices how to play a ball or a stone in the game. So it's a restriction. Silent coach, no active coaching are restriction, which are hard.
Yeah.
Which are pretty hard sometimes. But at the end, I think there are worse. They are good. It's an investment into the players and the player future, and it's a good thing. It's, to be honest, on some tournaments you are on the championship, for example, you are able to take a timeout. But also the timeout, you as a coach make the sign for the timeout, and the players, they have to accept it and show the same sign as well. And sometimes it happens that they don't see it for what reason ever. I know some players, they think we can handle it by ourselves, so we don't see the sign. Yeah. And some other players that really don't see it because they are playing the game. They don't care what happened left or right side.
Yeah.
But you have, this is your only chance. One timeout in 1 hour, and take it at the right time before you are deep in shit, before it's too late. Yeah. And it's also a challenge for the players. Pretty often people say in curling, yeah, the timeouts, they are not good because the percentage of bad stones after the timeout is very high. And maybe this can be, but if you don't train it when to take the best timeout, we are back to the same story. You have to train it. You have to take it. You have to use it to get practice. And also, yeah, this teach them, you know, we have to teach the kids more of this creativity. And it's the same as you say, when young kids often say, yeah, I'm bored, or it's boring, I have nothing to do. Well, it can be good as well. It can help them to develop themselves. And
I think I think we, you know, some of the team sports at junior level in this country could really learn from that, because, you know, the problem I have when I speak to coaches in youth development is that I think sometimes we give, you know, I think what we're talking about is feedback, aren't we? Giving in-game feedback. And I think sometimes in the youth development settings, we give that much feedback that we're actually over-constraining the player. So we're stopping them, like you say, being creative or being adaptive, you know, coming up with something themselves. And to me, that's a massive problem. I think the FA now, to be fair, I know in football are changing that with the coach education, which is great to see. But, you know, I could never envision, for example, in football, a coach just being silent the whole game unless a rule was put in. But, you know, you're saying in curling there, because that's the rule, I personally think that's fantastic for the player, because, I mean, it challenges the player. I can imagine it must be really difficult for them. But in the long run, surely they're going to be an unbelievable player, because they've had to figure it out themselves. It's their perception. You know, they see the cues and make the decision and everything. And the big thing for me is they're not reliant on the coach. Some of the players I coach now are adults. They are reliant on me to tell them what to do, because that's what they've had the whole sporting career. Mm. I hate that. I think that's awful. I think players should be able to just express themselves, you know, just come up with their own solution. So I certainly think, listening to what you're saying there, Charlie, I think, you know, over here in youth development in team sports, I think we could learn a lot from you know, curling and the restrictions and the rules.
Yeah, it's also, if you know, as a coach, you have the possibility to build your team as you like. So this get more and more important. So when we go to tournaments, we not often want to win the tournament. Most of the tournaments we go to be on in the top position. Maybe we win, but the victory on the tournament is not our main goal. The tournaments are mainly to educate all four players, and then we mix it. We have one, two players which are more senior, more experienced, and always one or two players which are newbies, first season, starting season, whatever, and they learn from each other. They learn on, hey, you have to give more handle, look more on the bro, you have to. This is also a part of the education. When we go into the championship tournament, there I'm honest, I put the player together which I think we have a good chance to win. Mm. That's but in the normal tournament, day tournament or 2 day tournament, it's not only about winning.
Yeah.
It's an education. It's also fun.
Yeah.
And I see some clubs sometimes, which when they come with four players, all of them are 6 years old, none of them ever played a tournament. It's kind of unfair for them.
Yeah.
They have no chance. Yeah. They know nothing.
Yeah.
They even don't know where to stand. And we are lucky in our club that we can train with 20 kids week by week. So we always have eight to 10 kids which are older, which also can train or teach the other ones. And you learn something if you explain it to others as well. Yeah. It's not only the doing, the practicing by yourself. It's and in football, and I never had this, then you are always in 1 or 2 years in the same age category. You don't, maybe you are lucky or good enough to play in a best team of the club, or in the, then you are the youngest. So you have to carry on the balls, collect the shots. But it's not the same learning experience.
Yeah. And I think, again, that's something that is underutilized. I have three younger brothers. So, you know, very much when we were sporting each other, we would teach each other different sports. And I think about some of my learning for new sports. For example, when I started learning basketball at about 14, I learned a lot of that from my brother who was 12. I didn't learn it from any coach. And I think that's something, again, that maybe because of how team sports is and the fact that there isn't any restrictions, well, players don't teach each other. But whereas in curling, when is that restriction that the coach cannot talk? Well, the players do then kind of have to talk. And I think, again, you know, for me, that would be something that if that restriction was in place here at youth development, that would probably really benefit our young players in team sports. So, you know, I certainly find that interesting.
Yeah, you have to learn how to help yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think, you know, just to finish this segment before we move on to the end, in curling, you know, you are the trainer. In team sports, you are the coach. So what is the fundamental difference in that? Is it the same, or is it a very slightly different role, would you say?
I would say it's a completely different role. As a trainer, you are on the pitch, on the rink, teach them the techniques, show them, explain them, work with them on techniques, physics. And as a coach, you are more on the strategy, on the mental thing. I have some players, when they walk in, I watch them in or read, not just watching, read in the eyes what day they had. And I can say how the training will be or how the tournament will be. And with the time, you also know that there are players, when 8 o'clock in the morning is the game, it's not the best idea to bring them. But if you are still playing at 6 o'clock in the evening, then you can bring them. Then they are fresh and awake. Yeah. And all our tournaments, there are for, as I mentioned, we play 1 hour, one game. And in a tournament, we have at least 3 to 4 games. And so it takes 8 to 10 hours at least a day of tournament. And again, small kids below 11. And you have to work with them also during this time. The concentration will fall down. And it's tradition after every game you go to having a drink together.
Yeah.
Not beer, but you sit down together, have a, we call it apero. Yeah. You drink something together with your competing team, and then you prepare for the next game. And this is also in youngest age, they drink a Coke or something like this.
Something suitable.
Yeah. And but then it on the tournament, and if you are more a coach, you talk with them also mental things, focus, concentration, what happened in their life, this is a complete other case than but you have you need this kind this level of trust also. If they accept you as a trainer, you get more easier a chance to be their coach.
Mm.
Because yeah, it's hard to come in and say I'm your coach. I have some mental tricks for you. Accept it, do it.
Yeah.
If they don't want it, if they don't, it's not from the inner side of them, yeah, a desire to, what can I do? How can I? And this needs a level of trust. And this trust you only gain in the trainings and be together with them.
Yeah, developing the athlete, well, trainer-athlete relationship, yeah. Yeah, brilliant point.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
So, yeah, you know, I'm obviously a bit conscious of time and I want to be respectful to your time, Charlie. So we always finish on this podcast with implications to coaching practice, but I think what would be a really suitable way to finish, actually, and what I would like to ask you is, what lessons do you think, I don't know if lessons is the right word, but what could youth team sports, so team sports within youth development, what could they learn from curling? And when I say that, I mean stuff like what we've discussed about maybe the rule of not being able to talk, for example. So is there anything like that you think that, you know, the team sports over here or wherever, but they could learn lessons for optimizing youth development, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I guess many team sports can learn from each other. From many sports can learn from curling, but curling can learn from other sports as well. But you know, we have to accept that not all our players will be playing at Olympic Games. But to make or to bring up good players, to let them grow, to support them during their development of as a curling player and as a human being, it's pretty important that you let them create an own creativity. They need to find their own solution. In management, it's the benchmarking, and if you say yeah, this is the benchmark, maybe you reach the benchmark, but you don't get better, never, because the aim is the benchmark, and this cannot, I think this can't be the goal, to be as good as the benchmark, which is very hard, from physiology, from your body, from your mind, from all. But you have to make the best out of your situation, and then it's pretty important that you find your own way. Mm. And this starts in early ages.
Yeah,
and it doesn't stop.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great point. Actually, very important points to consider for your players. And I think, you know, what's often forgot about, and I've done it myself loads of times, when you're in youth development and you're, for example, playing a football match and maybe you're in the cup and you get a bit excited and kind of forget you're coaching 8-year-olds and you think you're coaching a professional football team, it's very difficult to look past winning a game. But, you know, what I've often been taught a lot, and what I you know, continue to say to a lot of coaches is have that end goal in mind. So if they're under eights, well, they've got 10 years yet. So let's try and, you know, like you say, the creativity, the adaptability, you know, let's not get rid of that in them for the sake of winning. You know, I think about, I have for the adults team I manage, we have a player who's never been coached before. Never been a part of a team. She just played on the park. What a player. Skills, creative, adaptive, unbelievable. And I think if she'd have been coached, that would have just gone, because the coach would have said, no, don't do that, you know, fantastic turn you've done to evade the defender, because that might cost us and then we might concede a goal. And I think that's, you know, I think from what you're saying there, that would be my take of it as well.
You have to find the balance, you know.
And I think that's
if you have 11 street footballer.
And that's what I like about what you say of, you know, sometimes, like you say, it is more a bit of education, but sometimes you do want to win these tournaments, because it is important not to completely take the winning out as well, isn't it? You know, and I think that's the problem sometimes. People are either in one corner or the other. And I suppose, like you say, it is a balance, isn't it?
Yeah, if you start in a tournament, say, our goal is not to win, then you can go home. It's always the goal to win a game. But you have to be realistic that sometimes you have a bigger plan, a long-term plan. And that's the point where the programmer's approach comes in. Mm. We try to follow a kind of program approach, not from game to game, to plan from tournament to tournament or game to play. We want... we have a long-term view. We want to in most or in every category play have a one or two teams which is competitive, and we can't start it in the highest level. We need to start at the fundament, at the basics, and to bring team up and up and up. And this is the program, and with their. We need the fundament. We need the 20 young players to have eight or four in other categories.
Yeah, fantastic. I guess that brings us to a finish, Charlie. I have to say, a really fascinating discussion for me personally to hear more of an insight into curling, and you know, it sounds like you're doing a fantastic job over there. I mean, you know, for people listening who might be interested just to, you know, see a bit more about what you're doing, or maybe even contact you over social media, maybe to have a discussion about this stuff, if you're open to that, what would be the best way to find you on social media?
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me. And everybody can reach me, Charlie on tour, on Twitter, or on LinkedIn, Charlie Suter. I'm really happy to talk and to discuss with many people. It's not the case that we know it. We just try it, and we try it in our own way. And not all of you guys have to wait for the next Olympic Games. I know many curling hall is happy to have you in and try it out. Or at least, even with your football team, you can go there and have a lesson and see the difference. And we do it as well.
I imagine.
Some Arabic lessons or whatever.
I imagine it would be fascinating. It's been a real pleasure, you know, having you on the podcast, discussing insight into curling. But I think we've, you know, discussed some fantastic points there, would be really useful to coaches. And it's just been a really intriguing episode for me personally, just to hear a bit of an insight about coaching curling. And I certainly do believe that there are a lot of adaptations, lessons that we could take from curling and put into youth development. So I think that's been a fantastic episode, Charlie. And it just leaves me to say thank you so much for your time. I'm glad you've enjoyed it. It's been great to connect, and I'm sure we'll probably have another conference call or something at some point in the future. And once again, thank you to all the listeners for joining us today. As always, if you've got any questions, please do get in touch. Please do like and give the podcast a review. And we'll see everyone hopefully next week.